Hello and welcome to the American Magazine podcast for the week of May 14th. This is our Jesuit education issue, so we've brought two Jesuit educators to join us. First is Father John Schlegel. Welcome, Father John.
Thanks very much, Tim. I'm here, I think, because I have had 21 years as university president, nine at the University of San Francisco from 1990 to 2000, and 11 at Creighton University in Omaha from 2000 to 2011. Prior to that, I was dean at Marquette. So I have an overview of Jesuit higher education, and I'm very, very pleased with what I've seen and heard over the last three decades of what our institutions do, can do, and what they will continue to do. So I'm very happy to be part of this conversation.
And Father Leo Donovan, formerly of Georgetown University. Welcome.
And I'm very happy to be here with my marvelous, sonorous colleague. I was president of Georgetown from 1989 to 2001. And since then, I've been living in New York, my hometown, enjoying very much writing and teaching theology again, and serving on some boards that serve poor people.
All right, the question before us is one that has been posed to a group of educators in our current issue, which is our Jesuit education issue, and is how does a Catholic college or university communicate to students the value of religion and society? Maybe we would start with you, Father Schlegel. You were at two Jesuit universities, so you probably this question came up a lot, I imagine, in your experience.
Well, I think it did, and I think it's also a very important question looking at our present political landscape. I'd say a couple of things up front. I think, first of all, institutions have to model for their students what it means to be a religious institution in the public square. I think, secondly, the individual student, and it could be faculty or staff as well, have got to make that distinction between faith and religion. And I think, personally, I look at the faith side of it, and, you know, faith has something to do with the intellect, the emotions, and behavior. But I think only a faith-filled person can actually take religion into the public square. So the project is working on developing that faith content for that individual student and getting them to the point where they are passionate enough, zealous enough, brazen enough to take religion into the public square.
Now, Father Leo, this is a natural, I would imagine, for the students at Georgetown, many of whom are interested in careers in the public sphere in one way or another. So how did you approach this?
Well, I agree with John. I think I would add that each school has its own way of approaching things, and that's not because simply of personnel or leadership, faculty, alumni support. It's because each school has a particular history. Mm-hmm. And the wonderful thing about American higher education, in my view, is that there is the right school for the right young person if the person just looks carefully enough. College, university, they're analogous terms, and there's none that reproduce exactly what another does. And it's one reason I find the rating system so deplorable. I regret to say that Georgetown participated, but so did University of San Francisco and Creighton University and Harvard, and nobody has the guts to say this is a terrible way of representing American higher education. What it does is play down the strengths of particular institutions, especially, I would say, smaller institutions. And one of the things that we learned from the Second Vatican Council about religious life was the encouragement to discover the original inspiration, or as the council put it, the charism of a particular religious community. And I think that's true of educational institutions as well. To give you just an example, when John Carroll founded Georgetown in 1789, he was establishing a school that he hoped would be an anchor for religion in this country. He was a decidedly Catholic prelate. I like to say that he first founded Georgetown and then was made a bishop. I like to say even more that he was elected by his own bishops, though indeed approved by the Holy See. Well, from the beginning, Carroll wanted a school that would be open to citizens of every class and students of every religious profession. From the beginning, he thought that to serve in America, one had to be open, welcoming, inclusive, but also open to students of every class. He also started a school that was international from the beginning. We had students from all the colonies, and from many countries in South America, and that has continued to be part of the university's character. And as was typical of Jesuit schools from their founding in 1540 in Messina, it was to have high educational standards. So the vision that he had is something that the university tries to adhere to, and I think you can find that of every institution. I dare say, John, that when you started work at both San Francisco and Creighton, you had no idea of reinventing your school, but of taking out of its tradition its best elements and renewing them. And I think that's true, perhaps most of all, of institutions that served poor minorities and for whom the minorities today that are poor are entirely different looking, but very important. They're now Hispanic, of course, whereas the poor minorities of the young Catholic colleges in the 19th century were Irish and German and Italian.
You know, I'd like to pick up on that point because I think the difference in the environments and the culture of institutions very much respond to your question, Tim, and we answer it differently because of that context. And I would begin with the two that I do know. The University of San Francisco, very different from my Midwestern background. The city built on the hill. I use it as the connector institution within the city. But it was very different from the Midwest, and it was very different culturally. There's a different feel. It's a very liberal city. It was a very economically rich community. It was very arts-focused. It was also very Pacific Rim-focused. And that's the angle that I took at the University of San Francisco, was to take that institution closer to what was going to be a very important part of the economy as well as population of the area, and developed our Pacific Rim emphasis. And how does that speak to religion? Well, at that point, you're in dialogue with Buddhism and all the religions that come from the East, and you have a student mix that is, we were 49% international, of which about 35% of that were Asian of some description. So we had some interesting challenges with where did the Catholic iconography go? Were there crosses in the classroom? What kind of service did the campus ministry do, and how did they serve the non-Catholics or the non-believers? And at the same time, when I was just leaving, Leo's reference to the Hispanic line was coming into the USF student population. Now go 1,800 miles east and cross the Rockies and get to the banks of the Missouri in Omaha, Nebraska, Warren Buffett's hangout, and you have a very, very different environment. Now I got to tell you up front, I thrived in the Creighton environment. I'm passionate for the place. I did my Regency there. I did my first assignment of teaching there, my first publication, my tenure, all of that. So coming back, I was not going to reinvent, as Leo referenced, something that I already knew was of high quality. But we had some challenges. Diversity, it was heavily, like 91% Caucasian. When I left, it was about 30% foreign or international students of minority backgrounds. The curriculum, very focused, academic excellence given. All these polls that Leo referenced, we were in them as well, on the top of the list, I might say, for Midwestern comprehensive universities, 11 years in a row, number one. That didn't come easily, but in that quest for academic excellence came the response to your question. Because with bright students, civically engaged, doing community service, taking the Creighton/Catholic logo and identity into the broader Omaha community, into the Dominican Republic, they were really practicing taking religion into the public square. At the same time, quite different from USF, the iconography, the Catholic symbolism was very, very, very rich. Classes, every classroom had some sort of religious artifact in it. Public service from the community, from campus ministry, and all of that. So I think they served that diversity of students very, very well.
Now, Father Leo, a connected question. I mean, it seems like your experience in kind of urban school environments present a different kind of challenge in that you have a more diverse student body. You perhaps have a majority of non-Catholics in some instances. I'm interested in Georgetown, where a lot of these people go into government service, international service. Is the university try to impart to them, even if they are not Catholic or religious, some kind of respect for the place of religion in the public arena?
Oh, decidedly, yes. I think it's common, not simply in Jesuit schools, but in Catholic institutions across the country, to use certain now established means of promoting religious reflection on the campus among students, but also among faculty and staff and leadership, but also to involve people in public service. So the campus ministry, which John mentioned, has become, I think, significantly stronger at schools throughout the country, and certainly at the Jesuit schools I know. There are people who say, well, in my day, we went to Mass every day. One would not want to ask too far with what joy and ebullience and deep faith one went. Well, now there are retreat programs commonly at Catholic institutions. Many of our schools have retreat houses, which is not an inexpensive proposition, to promote time away from the campus. Faculty retreats are provided. Campus ministry also provides Annotation 19 retreats for faculty members who need not, incidentally, be Catholic. In addition, it provides worship services. I used to delight in asking Jewish friends, when do you think the first Jewish student graduated from Georgetown? Students, whose angle of vision is rather more brief, frequently told me, well, after the Second World War. Well, it so happens the first Jewish student graduated in 1834. And we hired in 1968 a Jewish rabbi to be a chaplain for our Jewish students. While I was president, we hired an imam to work with our Muslim students. The idea being, as I like to put it, if you leave your religion parked at the front gate and never think about it again until you graduate 4 years later, it's going to be a pretty rusty vehicle. So we encourage students of every background to reflect on what had contributed so much to their lives or what was contributing to their fellow students' lives. A growing influence has been to have on many campuses a specific officer for Catholic identity and mission who would promote programs, not simply worship and service, but academic programs as well among faculty. And that brings me to one point I'd like to emphasize. In the hiring of faculty and the enrichment of faculty, the mission of the school should be very clearly presented so that faculty know what kind of a school they're joining. They won't all be as interested in the religious dimension, but they will enjoy the school and being part of it much less if they're not sympathetic to that mission. And that's a task not for a day or a year or the tenure of one or another president, but for a living tradition, I think.
Are there some similar challenges you face, Father John?
Absolutely, and I think the one on hiring is very central to all of this, and I agree with everything that Leo said. You hire folks who are compatible with the mission. They don't necessarily have to be of a cradle Catholic to attribute to a Creighton or USF or a Jesuit university. I also say I think the role of the faculty, when they come in, if they are sympathetic to the mission, the students pick that up. They pick that up in their demeanor in the classroom, the way they treat each other. If they come in antithetical to the mission, the students pick it up as well. I frequently tell faculty in their new faculty orientation that they are modeling for their students not just their intellectual capacity or their ability to teach or to do high tech in the classroom. They're modeling a lifestyle, a vocation, and their own way of living and being and operating in the community they're a part of. So I think the faculty hiring is central to keeping the mission alive. And everything that goes on with campus ministry and the retreats, the 19th annotation, the Creighton website has the daily reflection, and we have online retreats, and we stream all sorts of things across the globe, literally. And it's been a tremendous resource in getting religion, getting faith of whatever tradition, out front. I think the dialogue that goes on in the Great Plains between men and women of different faith traditions is nothing short of incredible, given where they are and where we are today. Jewish students, Muslim students, Buddhist students, Catholic, Christian, of any description. I think it's very gratifying myself. And I've been a pluralist and a champion of diversity now for almost 30 years in higher education, and I could not be more pleased with what I'm seeing on our campuses.
Now, the whole question of Catholic identity is one that's come up a lot in the last 10, 15, 20 years on Catholic college campuses, especially, you know, urban campuses where you have a really mixed, pluralistic body. And there are some, you know, forces within the church that feel like there should be more emphasis on Catholic identity and feel like some universities maybe are stepping back from that. What's the challenge there? I mean, it seems like it's a hard balance to strike. Father Leo, I'm sure you ran into this many times.
No.
Leo and I sat together for almost a decade discussing this very thing as Cordia Ecclesiae, which yes. actually was a very good experience, but I'll let him pick it up from there.
It's a better experience looking back on it, though, wouldn't you say, John?
Oh, indeed.
I like to remember what Father Giuseppe Pitau said, who was a secretary at the Congregation for Catholic Education. He was the president of two Catholic universities, among many other services he rendered the church and the society. This is an Italian Jesuit, Father Pitau, who was the president of the Gregorian University in Rome, which he, understandably enough, considered a distinguished and genuinely Catholic institution, and it was about 99.1% Catholic. He was also the president of Sophia University in Tokyo, which was about, and I'm talking now about student population and faculty population, that was about 1.5% Catholic.
Wow.
And yet Joe thought that they were both Catholic universities. And I mean, after all, he was the secretary of the congregation. So some of the talk about Catholic identity is, I think, a little manic and driven by a concern for assured identity, which is untrue to ordinary human experience. If you compare, however, the effort and commitment in terms of manpower and budget at Catholic schools in this country in the last 50 years and still more in the last 20 years to what was possible in the 19th and early 20th century, I think there's been enormous progress. And when people complain about a dumb play being put on a Catholic campus or a speaker whom they really would prefer not ever to hear, I say, well, you don't have to go to the play, and you don't have to go to the speaker, but this is the real world, and we want our young people to have an opportunity to prepare for full public lives in that world. And that's what the faculty certainly want. The faculty don't want to educate sheltered young citizens.
Right. It would seem to me if you want to make a, for example, a critical response to some of these plays or these speakers, then you need to engage them. You can't just shut them out.
Exactly. I really agree with Leo on all of the above. And I do believe that the Catholic institutions that I'm familiar with today are much more deliberately Catholic and purposely Catholic than ever before. And part of that is because of the decade of conversation about Ex Cordia Ecclesiae, what is our Catholic identity? I think a lot of us did reflect a little more seriously on what it was. And that, I think, has emboldened us to really put the Catholicism in the center of our identity. And then these things that float around, like the play, the speaker, the honorary degree, the real thing. And Pope Benedict said that when he addressed the university presidents on a visit to Washington, the real thing is not the statistics of your faculty or your students. It's the ethos of the campus, your liturgical life, your sacramental life, your sense of service and justice. And I think he, by saying that to us, released so much of the anxiety that we had to be some orthodox kinds of institutions on every point. And he said, absolutely not. The orthodoxy is obviously coarse content, but it's not the way the institution functions. The ethos of the institution, its liturgy, its sacramental life, is where you really show your Catholicism and share that with whoever is there to partake.
Amen. And it's particularly American, don't you think,
yes,
John?
Yes.
When de Tocqueville visited this country in the early 19th century, he remarked on the associational proclivity of Americans, their tendency between government and ordinary civil society to join organizations of all sorts and to weave the fabric of American life through freely chosen multiple organizations in which they exercise their talents, their generosity, their abilities. And that's very true of American Catholic higher education in general, and it's a way we have at a professedly Catholic institution of having a distinctive, as you say, ethos.
I'm interested in, I'm thinking of Creighton University and some of the great work that's been done, on, you know, offering some spiritual resources for people, not just on campus, but beyond the campus. Is there a role for the Catholic University in that way to kind of serve as a place, a resource, not just for students or alumni, but also the larger Catholic community, especially at a time now where it seems like there's been some fragmentation, perhaps parish life is not as vibrant as it once was. Can universities help fill some of that gap?
I think they're primary responsibility to be a service of the local church through a variety of ways, and could be what's on their website or the kind of publications they do, or even the local Jesuit community supplying within the parishes. But if we take Creighton for an example, the answer is yes, we are actually global. The student reflections and the daily reflections are done in English and Spanish, but the 19th annotation is done as Chinese, done in Russian, it's done in Spanish, Chinese both Mandarin and Cantonese, and it's done in Portuguese, all from people who have been to our Summer Institute for Spirituality, have come from those linguistic traditions, loved what they saw, and volunteered to translate them for us. So that is a service, and it's documented with dozens of dioceses globally, of this being a tremendous asset for the local church. At the same time, they do the speaker series, they're recorded, they're streamed. So you can be sitting in Pocatello and listening to a lecture going on in Omaha or probably at Georgetown as well. So I think tremendous possibilities out there, especially with the electronic media where it is, that our institutions can be great service not just to the local church and the national church, but truly the global church.
Well, maybe we can end. I'm kind of interested, Father Leo, you mentioned about the Tocqueville and some of the American... Yes. Values that are instilled in some of these institutions. It's really a remarkable achievement of the American church when you look at the number of colleges and universities that are here, not just the 27 schools run by the Jesuits, of course, but the many women religious. What is it about the American experiment that has allowed this to flourish?
Well, we were the first government established by revolution that, I think, separating church and state is an incorrect or very partial statement, but that guaranteed freedom of religion, and I think strongly continues to guarantee freedom of religion, which meant that religious communities could establish initiatives on their own, and they did, which simply has never happened before in the history of the world. There's no comparison whatsoever between the American Catholic higher educational system and even the universities of Paris. It's an extraordinary phenomenon.
It is.
I would also say that only in the last 50 or so years have the schools and colleges that are Catholic in this country become colleges and universities of the first rank academically. But they have. And they compete at every level, from undergraduate life through graduate school, law school, medical school, for the best possible students. And that's just never happened before in the history of Catholicism.
Absolutely.
And we should, to my mind, look to that achievement with gratitude and confidence whenever we ask, well, are they really Catholic? They're massively and remarkably, almost miraculously Catholic, and they are happy to be so. It's wonderful. All the while, I have to admit that I enjoy teaching at Union Theological Seminary, which is a Protestant institution.
Leo's sentiment is very well captured in Of My Many Things piece in this very issue of America,
okay,
which I talk about the success of the Catholic universities. And I end with a quote to paraphrase St. Paul in Acts of the Apostles. I am compelled to proclaim what I have seen and what I have heard.
That's great, John.
That's perfect.
And I did not know about this wonderful OMT.
Well, we will point our listeners in that direction, but we want to thank both Father John Schlegel and Father Leo O'Donovan for joining us.
Thank you, Jim. It's been our pleasure.